From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a warning to those who killed a U.S. journalist, airstrikes continuing in the Gaza conflict, the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, plus anger and violence in a small U.S. town. Here in Washington on Wednesday, President Obama condemned the beheading of an American journalist by Islamic State militants, sometimes referred to as ISIL. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez has our report.
President Obama interrupted his vacation in the U.S. state of Massachusetts to issue a stern and solemn statement after U.S. intelligence confirmed the authenticity of a video showing a militant killing journalist James Foley.
Today, the entire world is appalled by the brutal murder of Jim Foley by the terrorist group ISIL.
The Islamic State group, also known as ISIL, has advanced through northwestern Iraq in recent weeks. President Obama recently ordered airstrikes that have helped Iraqi forces, including Kurdish fighters, stop the militants from approaching the northern city of Erbil. The strikes have also enabled Iraqi forces to take back control of the country's main dam and made it possible to rescue thousands of Yazidi refugees trapped on Sinjar Mountain in northern Iraq. The militants have said they killed Foley in retaliation for the airstrikes. Mr. Obama said U.S. operations will continue and warned the U.S. will seek justice.
The United States of America will continue to do what we must do to protect our people. We will be vigilant and we will be relentless. When people harm Americans anywhere, we do what's necessary to see that justice is done.
President Obama praised Foley, a 40-year-old independent journalist who reported on the suffering of the Syrian people during that country's civil war and who had not been seen since militants abducted him in Syria nearly 2 years ago.
Now, Jim Foley's life stands in stark contrast to his killers. Let's be clear about ISIL. They have rampaged across cities and villages, killing innocent, unarmed civilians in cowardly acts of violence.
U.S. intelligence officials confirmed the video released this week also shows Stephen Sotloff, another missing American journalist. Sotloff's fate remains unknown. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
And before President Obama spoke to the nation on Wednesday, he spent some time on phone with James Foley's parents, John and Diane Foley, who spoke with reporters at their Rochester, New Hampshire home.
So many people were praying for Jim, and I really think that's what gave Jim an unusual courage. Jim just could feel the prayers. He was strong, courageous, loving to the end. I mean, we just hardly recognize our little boy. I mean, he was just a hero, you know?
And you know from the videos, his last words were, "I wish I had more time. My family."
So Jim had a big heart, and that's what we shared with President Obama. You know, we just pray that Jim's death can bring our country together in a stronger way and with the values that Jim hold dear.
Held dear.
Sir, Jim would never want us to hate or be bitter.
James Foley's parents, Diane and John Foley, they were speaking on Wednesday. And at the United Nations in New York on Wednesday, Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General spokesperson Stefan Dujarric, appeared before reporters.
The Secretary General condemns in the strongest terms the horrific murders of journalist James Foley, an abominable crime that underscores the campaign of terror the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant continues to wage against the people of Iraq and Syria. He extends his deepest condolences to the families, friends, and colleagues of Mr. Foley. The perpetrators of this and other such horrific crimes must be brought to justice.
Foley's killing has drawn a sharp response in Britain, where counterterrorism police are trying to identify the photojournalist's killer because the beheading video featured the voice of a man speaking with a British accent. French President François Hollande told Le Monde newspaper that there should be an international conference and a global strategy to address the crisis surrounding the Islamic State militants, members of a group that he called well-structured, well-financed, and in possession of sophisticated weapons. Mr. Olan said this is the worst problem the international community has faced since 2001, when terrorist attacks against the United States killed nearly 3,000 people. France has contributed weapons to help Kurdish fighters in northern Iraq. Israel and Palestinians in the Gaza Strip carried out dozens of attacks on one another Wednesday, with one Israeli airstrike killing the wife and infant son of the Hamas military leader in Gaza, Mohammed Deif. Israel said it hit more than 90 targets in Gaza Wednesday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the Israeli military would conduct an extensive campaign in Gaza until calm and safety is restored for the country's citizens. Abu Ubaidah, a spokesperson for the Hamas military wing, said this message is directed to the Zionist enemy. Mohammed Deif will be the commander-in-chief of the army, and this leader will be the one who will bring liberation. Hamas warned international airlines against flying into Tel Aviv starting Thursday. Earlier in the conflict, some airlines canceled flights there after a rocket landed nearby. Israel said Hamas has fired more than 140 rockets across the border since Tuesday's ceasefire collapsed and fighting resumed. There had been a 10-day lull in fighting while Palestinian and Israeli negotiators held indirect talks in Cairo in search of a long-term end.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Liberia has quarantined two areas around the capital, Monrovia, and declared a nationwide curfew as authorities scramble to stop the spread of Ebola. The disease has killed more than 430 people there, the highest death toll in any nation affected by the outbreak. The new emergency measures have heightened tensions, though, in Monrovia. VOA's Ann Look has more with reporting from Monrovia by Prince Collins.
Police fired tear gas Wednesday to disperse a crowd in the West Point area of Monrovia, a suburb that had been placed under quarantine just hours earlier. The people were trying to get past a newly erected police checkpoint. A West Point resident who was in the crowd told VOA by phone that he had been trying to go to a nearby market to buy food. The residents of West Point were not given advance notice of the quarantine declared late Tuesday. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf said West Point and Dolo Town, also outside the capital, are now, quote, areas of intensity for Ebola and will be quarantined under full security watch.
This means there will be no movements in and out of those areas.
West Point is where an angry mob raided an Ebola treatment center during the weekend. Looters walked away with bedding and hospital materials that could have been contaminated. The government says the 37 patients who fled the center during the attack have since been found. But the incident thrust the capital into a panic. The government blamed the attack on a, quote, misunderstanding among locals about the purpose of the center, which was to observe suspected Ebola cases. Effective Wednesday, Liberia is under a nationwide curfew from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. President Sirleaf said existing emergency measures, like the quarantine of several affected border counties, have not been enough.
We have been unable to control the spread due to continued denials, cultural bearing practices, disregard for the advice of health workers, and disrespect for the warnings by the government. As a result, and due to the large population concentration, the disease has spread widely in Monrovia and its environs.
Liberians continue to complain of shortcomings in the government's response. Residents of Monrovia and other affected parts of the country say they are reporting dead bodies to authorities as instructed, but it is still taking days for burial teams to arrive to pick them up. Ebola is transmitted through close contact with a sick person's bodily fluids. Corpses of Ebola victims are especially contagious, so the government has forbidden private burials. Public health experts tell VOA that poor communication and challenges in the field are heightening public anxiety and risk undercutting confidence in the authorities. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
World Health Organization reported new Ebola figures on Wednesday, 221 new cases, bringing the total number of cases across Liberia, Guinea, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone to just under 2,500. West African countries at the center of this Ebola outbreak have at least one thing in common. They have weak health care systems. Experts say that prevented Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone from responding quickly and effectively to the epidemic. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The international nonprofit NGO, Management Sciences for Health, says that strong health systems are key to a successful response to Ebola and other infectious diseases. Dan Nelson is the organization's expert on fragile states. He describes what's often lacking in countries with weak healthcare systems.
They tend not to have sufficient qualified personnel. They tend not to have routine data collection systems that are reliable, so it's difficult to get good planning. Poor facilities, lack of equipment, lack of supplies, lack of essential medicines.
He says there's a reason many developing countries have not invested in their health systems.
Many of them are financially strapped to begin with, especially those in conflict or post-conflict. During times of conflict, generally resources can be siphoned off for the war effort or for general security. Also, these tend to be poorer countries. So if you look at basic economic indicators, you're going to find that most of the fragile states are indeed quite poor to begin with and have a hard time funding, even in the best of times, some health facilities.
What's more, Nelson says, these countries often lack infrastructure for educating and training health personnel. Also, many health workers come under attack, not only in conflict situations, but in the Ebola-affected countries. Many have been threatened by residents of towns and villages when they have attempted to deal with the Ebola outbreak. Much of that has been blamed on fear and stigma surrounding the disease. There's also a shortage of health workers in developing countries. Many leave for better jobs in richer nations. In Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, many health workers themselves have been infected by the Ebola virus.
Generally, the health care workers are on the front line. Sometimes they're insufficiently trained to deal with a situation like this, and sometimes they have insufficient equipment. You see the WHO, CDC people coming in with these contamination suits in which they are completely blocked from any threat of contamination, and even with those suits sometimes you still find some contamination. Sometimes it's just bad luck. Despite having the suit, you could still have a needle stick that would puncture the suit and you could still become infected.
The Management Sciences for Health official says in building a strong healthcare system, it's very important to get women involved. Also, the system needs to be resilient, strong enough to withstand shocks and trauma. The Ebola outbreak and natural disasters are two examples.
Especially in Africa, where most of my experience is, you find that there's an amazing amount of creativity in problem solving. They're used to working in situations with very poor infrastructure, and they're used to being able to get things done. But they do need resources.
He says it's important to work with the local population in building health systems. He says when bringing in outside medical personnel to help in a crisis, they should be made familiar with the local culture and customs. One of the problems health workers have faced in the Ebola outbreak is a denial among some that the disease even exists. Nelson says targeted education campaigns can help. This includes the use of local radio in rural areas. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays on the Voice of America.
Ukrainian military says it has reclaimed control of a crucial town in Donetsk province following heavy fighting with pro-Russian separatists. VOA's Gabe Joslow reporting now from Kiev. Security forces say they are employing new tactics in the battle to divide and defeat rebel factions.
Ukrainian national security spokesman Andrei Lysenko says the military is now in control of the town of Ilovaisk. During yesterday and part of today, he said, the Ukrainian army managed to enter the town completely. He says he cannot say the city is fully freed of terrorists, but says it is under the control of Ukrainian forces. Lysenko described the town, 40 kilometers from the city of Donetsk, as a crucial logistical hub for separatist fighters, with train lines and major roads serving as supply lines. The spokesman said separatist fighters are continuing to launch counterattacks against Ukrainian forces from the area. He also described a new tactic used by the Ukrainian military to get the upper hand in the battle.
Наразі вона полягає в тому, щоб блокувати основні загони терористів у містах.
It is about blocking the main terrorist squads in towns, he said. Cut them into sectors and destroy them sector by sector. Ukrainian commanders say they are surrounding the key rebel stronghold city of Donetsk, while fighting is also ongoing in Luhansk province near the border with Russia. Local officials say 34 civilians have been killed in fighting during the past 2 days, while at least 9 Ukrainian servicemen have also been killed. Kiev accuses Russia of continuing to supply separatists in eastern Ukraine, while Moscow has denied involvement. Both sides of the conflict blame each other for a recent strike on a civilian convoy leaving the besieged town of Luhansk, killing at least 17 people. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko plan to meet next week at a summit in Minsk, the capital of Belarus, to discuss key issues of contention between the two countries, including the conflict in the east and a dispute about the supply of Russian natural gas. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Kiev.
Here in the U.S., violence and anger as well as frustration continues to grip the small St. Louis suburb of Ferguson. That's in the state of Missouri. Protests broke out after a white police officer fatally shot an unarmed African-American teenager on August the 9th. VOA's Mary Alice Salinas has more from Ferguson.
Violent protests overshadow peaceful demonstrations in Ferguson as it tries to recover from days of rioting, looting, and vandalism.
Well, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Hundreds of volunteers helped to clean up this devastated neighborhood. This restaurant has been hit twice.
But you got people who are coming in and not having anything to do with this, and they're tearing up stuff.
Nearby, there is a makeshift memorial for Michael Brown, the unarmed African-American teenager shot and killed on August 9 by a white police officer. It's a case that many believe has become a flashpoint for a deep, unresolved issue in America.
There's still a significant division of white America and black America, and my belief is that until there is true interaction, that we're never going to fully resolve the problem.
I want to thank all of you for your hard work today.
Bishop Edwin Bass and other religious leaders have spoken with U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, the nation's top law enforcement officer.
We're praying for justice.
The FBI is investigating possible civil rights violations, and local and state police are conducting their own probe. The vast majority of residents, like Irma Dupree, condemn violence but demand justice.
And that's something that we are determined to take back, power and authority. And it's not just against the police officers. It's against the political people as well.
Amnesty International has accused police of violating the rights of peaceful demonstrators, something they deny.
We have an international.
State Highway Patrol Captain Ronald Johnson says they must protect demonstrators against a small group responsible for the violence.
We saw the criminal element masking themselves behind good people, putting good people at risk, and daring us to address them. Our freedom of speech is one of the greatest things that we have. And we have no intentions of trying to take that away.
Hey, guys.
Bishop Bass says a Justice Department probe into Brown's death is critical.
If the appropriate decision is understood and made, it will bring peace to this community. If the community feels there's a sense that it is not being treated justly, unfortunately, there will continue to be unrest.
Bass says in the meantime, he and other leaders will keep working to lower the level of anger here.
We older people out here.
In Ferguson, Missouri, I'm Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOAnews.com.
Visit VOAnews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
In 1999, the U.S. Space Agency launched an unmanned craft named Stardust on a mission to capture particles from a comet and some of the interstellar space dust streaming through our galaxy. VOA's Roseanne Skirball has an update on recent findings, which could shed new light on the origin and evolution of the universe.
The precious cargo was parachuted back to Earth in a canister in 2006 and recovered in the American Southwest. Scientific analysis of its contents determined the target comet contained rocks formed near the early sun. Now a study of the dust between the stars reveals these tiny rocks may come from beyond our solar system. University of California, Berkeley physicist Andrew Westfall is lead author. Writing in the journal Science, he says the interstellar sample has already yielded data impossible to gather from land or space-based telescopes.
The big surprise is that these particles are not all the same. They are each different from each other. And so we're getting our first glimpse into the diversity and complexity of interstellar dust on a particle-by-particle basis, and within the particles themselves, which are really complicated objects.
The particles are tiny, more than 1,000 times smaller than a grain of sand.
So the challenge we had was, when the mission came back, how do we figure out where the particles are in the collector? And to do this, we recruited the help of citizen scientists from all over the world. More than 32,000 people have been participating in this project, and they've collectively done more than 100 million searches using a tool that was developed to run on a web browser.
The needle in a haystack search yielded some 100 thin-line tracks of suspected particles lodged in the aerogel and aluminum parts of the collector. The study reports on 7 of those particles that remained intact. Westfall and the 65 co-authors suggest those specks may be from outside our solar system, perhaps created in a supernova explosion millions of years ago and altered by exposure to the extreme space environment.
But there's more work to do, and one of the things that we need to do next on the particles, particularly in the aerogel, is to, turns out, to measure the relative amounts of the 3 stable isotopes of oxygen. And that will really tell us about interstellar origin.
If these 3 different forms of oxygen do not match up, then Westfall says it's probable they come from beyond our solar system.
But the challenge we have is that these particles are so tiny that in the process of trying to make the measurement, we could easily lose them. And so we're going to be practicing over the next 2 or 3 years, refining our techniques and practicing over and over and over on analogs to make sure that our techniques are sufficiently reliable that we won't lose them when we do the real thing.
Westfall says the 7 grains are a small but important step in unraveling the mystery of how materials cycle through our galaxy.
As material condenses into stars and into solar systems, and then stars evolve and they synthesize new nuclei and new kinds of new atoms, which are then ejected back out into the interstellar medium to make a new generation of stars.
A process, Westfall says, has been going on since the galaxy's creation. In addition to this study, researchers are releasing another dozen articles in the journal Mediatrics and Planetary Science on the methods and techniques used to handle the fine grains of space dust. Roseanne Skirball, VOA News, Washington.
Billy Crystal will be paying tribute to Robin Williams, his longtime friend and fellow comedian, at next week's Emmy Awards. Crystal will honor Williams as part of the traditional In Memoriam segment for industry members who died during the year. Williams was found dead from an apparent suicide in his Northern California home on August the 11th. At last year's Emmys, Williams honored his friend and mentor, Jonathan Winters, during the tribute segment. The Emmy Awards presented to persons involved in the U.S. television industry. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. You know, if you'd like to have a podcast of this very program or other programs on The Voice of America, go to voanews.com and look under the Programs tab. check out the show that you want to have a copy of. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Sidrak Franklin, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Thursday.
This is Today in History. On August 21st, 1831, a bloody slave revolt led by Nat Turner began in Virginia. The rebellion was crushed 2 days later. Turner eluded authorities for 2 months before being captured, tried, and executed. On this date in 1858, the first of 7 debates between Republican Abraham Lincoln and Democrat Stephen Douglas for an Illinois Senate seat occurred in the town of Ottawa. A recurrent issue in the debates was slavery. Although Lincoln lost the election, his eloquence in opposing slavery launched him to national prominence. Lincoln went on to win the presidency in 1860. In 1878, the American Bar Association, a voluntary association of lawyers and law students, was founded. In 1904, American jazz pianist, bandleader, and composer William James Count Basie was born. Basie was a leading musician during America's swing era in the 1930s and 1940s. In 1944, representatives of the United States, the Soviet Union, the United Kingdom, and the Republic of China began a series of meetings in Washington. What was known as the Dumbarton Oaks Conference led to the founding of the United Nations. On August 21, 1959, U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed an executive order proclaiming Hawaii the 50th state of the Union. In 1968, Private First Class James Anderson was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor for heroism during the Vietnam War, becoming the first black Marine to receive the nation's highest military award. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is appalled by the brutal murder of American journalist James Foley by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. Foley, 40, was taken hostage nearly 2 years ago in Syria while courageously reporting on the conflict there. Jim Foley's life, said President Barack Obama, stands in stark contrast to his killers.
Let's be clear about ISIL. They have rampaged across cities and villages, killing innocent, unarmed civilians in cowardly acts of violence. They abduct women and children and subject them to torture and rape and slavery. They've murdered Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, by the thousands. They target Christians and religious minorities, driving them from their homes, murdering them when they can, for no other reason than they practice a different religion.
Clearly, ISIL has no ideology of any value to human beings, said President Obama. They may claim out of expediency that they are at war with the United States or the West, but the fact is they terrorize their neighbors and offer them nothing but an endless slavery to their empty vision and the collapse of any definition of civilized behavior. People like this, said President Obama, ultimately fail because the future is won by those who build and not destroy. The world is shaped by people like Jim Foley and the overwhelming majority of humanity who are appalled by those who killed him. The United States, said President Obama, will continue to do what we must to protect our people.
We will be vigilant and we will be relentless. When people harm Americans anywhere, we do what's necessary to see that justice is done, and we act against ISIL, standing alongside others.
There has to be a clear rejection of this kind of nihilistic ideology, said President Obama. ISIL has no place in the 21st century. America's friends and allies around the world share a common security and a common set of values. And we will continue to confront this hateful terrorism, said President Obama, and replace it with a sense of hope and civility.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.